Hello and welcome to Real Talk. It's Women's History Month, and this week we're launching a special four-part series, Real Talk Unleashed. I am honored to welcome three learned women who are going to tackle four controversial topics this month. They are activist Tanya Kinnear, journalist Christina George, and theatrical producer-director Zane Jones. Each of us has chosen a topic to start the discussion. Today's subject is gender identity, and I'll turn the mic now to our thought leader for the day. She is Zane Jones. Welcome, Zane. Welcome, Tanya. Welcome, Christina.
Thanks. Good to see everybody. Well, as I was thinking of different topics since we discussed doing this series, I was thinking about gender identity and wanting to talk a little bit just from the point of view of being a middle-aged, self-identifying lesbian who has spent a good deal of my time, my adult life on the planet, identifying as queer, lesbian, gay, whatever. And now looking at what's going on in the world today and seeing all the different options and all the ways in which we've changed and grown in our understanding and concept of gender identity, I look back and identify and see in my own life a journey that had a lot to do with, you have this choice and that choice, and that was about it. it's like, you're born this way, and so that's your identity. It's a physiological thing. And I have to say, I did grow up in a home with four brothers. So being a girl wasn't super popular necessarily in my home in certain ways. And by that, I mean, I guess I always wanted to do stuff that my brothers were doing. And I don't know that that had anything to do with having four brothers. It had more to do with my own gender identity that never really had an outlet. I think if I were born today and I had pretty super progressive parents, like I see some of my colleagues have, are those kinds of parents, I might have been, a gender fluid kind of kid, or I don't know that I would have done the they, them thing, in terms of gender pronouns. But I've never really been comfortable as she, her, but I'm also not someone who wants to be he, him, and I don't want to be they, them. So I'm just something else. So I'll come up with another word maybe. I don't know. But anyway, my point is just that it's been an interesting journey of trying to understand for myself where I fit, because I think we all want to fit in some way. And so for me, that was in the lesbian community because my sexual orientation happened to be that. And as far as my gender identity, I never really, even in that community, I never really identified as what in my generation would have been termed a butch lesbian, but I certainly didn't consider myself to be, femme either. So I was always kind of in that in-between zone of whatever I was. So... I just was curious and have always been curious and interested in throughout my life the ways in which, as a culture, it seems to me anyway, we have a real kind of concern about wanting to know and understand what you are. And we want to know, like, well, are you this or are you that? Are you gay? Are you straight? And anything in between was always a bit suspect. Are you, okay, so you're either female or male, and if we get misidentified, then people get upset about that. I use the example that I've often been mistaken as male when someone doesn't look at my face or they just see me from behind because I'm taller and I don't wear quote feminine clothing or whatever. And then people get very upset and they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. I meant her. And it's like, it's okay. I've said that 100 times in my life. And what is it about, this blurring of the lines? Because I've also had people be upset where they feel like they've been fooled. This older woman, my grandmother, I went and visited her. Such a funny story. I went with my girlfriend to visit my grandmother who had dementia. She was in an old people's home or whatever. And the woman sitting with her was eating food. And at one point she kept calling me he. And then she looked up at me and my grandmother corrected her very vehemently and said, it's not a he, it's a she. And she looked at me like I had betrayed her. She goes, oh, no, that's not right. Oh. She kept shaking her head and it was really uncomfortable because meanwhile, I'm in the presence of my grandmother who I've never come out to or anything. So it was very awkward. But anyway.
But did you say you've never come out to your grandmother?
I hadn't at that point. Certainly was not going to begin. Yeah. She had dementia. And, I didn't think it was the time to have a conversation with my grandmother about my sexual orientation.
It's not her highest concern at that point in life, right?
Right, exactly. So anyway, so that's just what I kind of was you know, to get us started. Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, how we define ourselves in terms of gender and what our journey has been with that, and what is it in our culture that you know, what are we so afraid of if someone's different or if someone changes or they change their mind about, you know, and of course it's often connected to sexual orientation, but it doesn't have to be. But, you know, people are fluid there too. Sometimes people are with same sex, sometimes they're never with same sex, sometimes it changes. So I kind of was throwing that out there as a starting point for our conversation today in terms of gender identity.
Thank you, Zane. And I didn't give Tanya and Christina a chance to speak and say, welcome, Tanya. Glad you're here. Say hello.
Hello.
So we know when you speak, who's speaking.
Yep.
And Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina George.
Okay. So now we know who everybody is. Zane, thank you for that drop of stimulation for our conversation. One of the things you said before we actually started the show was, why is it offensive to be mistaken for the other gender? What's so bad about being a man or a woman or a they? What do you think about that? What is offensive about those things? About the mistakes? Why?
Confusion?
Well, you know, I have to think of there's a particular story. There's a support group of women. They're called the Flat and Fabulous. They're breast cancer survivors who have chosen not to reconstruct.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these women live in the rural South or places where it's when you go into a public restroom, if you don't look like a woman, it really does cause some issues. And these women who had, you know, gone through cancer treatment and maybe lost their hair, so they really were looking the way that they do, they got harassed using the public restroom at Walmart. There's one woman in particular who's just saying how glad she was that now they finally had gender-neutral bathrooms, because not only does it serve all people, but that for these women who were going through this, like, they actually felt more empathy for people who were maybe transgender or gender fluid. And there was an empathy that a lot of these breast cancer survivors had not considered before. I know we're kind of veering off topic a little bit here, but it's just something about that I wanted to mention.
Well, I think it does speak to gender identity, and it does speak to that question of why is it offensive to be mistaken for a different gender?
And I think, it might seem silly, but I do think that this issue that's very political right now about bathroom usage is an interesting area that kind of shows us some of the complexity of the issue, for sure, right? I went to the doctor recently, and I came out in the office building. It was a big office building, and they had all gender bathrooms. That's it.
All gender.
And I walked in, and it's like six stalls. And I thought, okay, this is for me. It felt uncomfortable. Like, I feel uncomfortable going into women's restrooms in some ways. I kind of always have. Like, I, you know, it's always in locker rooms. It was always weird in the gym because I'd run into friends of mine. It'd be like a straight woman walking into it, you know, like somebody maybe you want to go on a date with and you're like, I don't want them to see you naked. Like, I always have felt uncomfortable going into women's. I mean, I'd go in, but do you know what I mean? Because of my sexual orientation. Like,
right.
It's always a weird kind of twist because it's really more for straight people than not, I guess, the whole separation in some ways. I would always feel more comfortable being naked in front of a man, for instance, but I don't want to be in a bathroom next to a dude who's taking a pee, you know. So it was a weird thing to walk into this bathroom and thinking, like, I feel weird being in here in this bathroom knowing that some guy could come in.
Like,
I would
feel uncomfortable
weird
to me in a way.
Yeah.
And I certainly wouldn't want to send my daughter into a bathroom if I had a daughter. You know, if I had a daughter, I wouldn't want her, you know. So it's an interesting, on the other hand, I think people should be able to go into the bathrooms where they feel, obviously, if someone's transgender and they identify and their gender identity is female, they should be able to go into.
Right. Well, the high school has, on Vashon, has gender neutral restrooms now too.
It's, right.
I had my first experience yesterday. I went into PCC in Burien and they had those bathrooms. Then I went in and suddenly this man came out and he was washing his hands next to me, and, you know, and I did feel a little strange, but I thought, this is good, I guess. But I was really, it was just weird, you know.
You know, we're talking about why is it offensive to be mistaken for the other gender. But then we also had the question of why have we stuck with this binary definition for so long? And my thought there was, okay, historically, it's a biological thing. It has been biological for procreation. And also, I think, maybe there's some sense of protecting females from aggressive males, which might be the discomfort we feel being in a bathroom with a man. Mm-hmm. And so as the culture changes and hopefully men become less aggressive and gender and sexuality are not just about procreation, we have to get used to those ideas, which younger people are, of letting go of those basic discomforts that we have from what has been a strictly binary definition. This is kind of new. So how do we deal with the change?
Well, I think you're right, first of all, to point at the issue of power, because I think it's a lot about the shift has a lot to do with letting go of, or whether we acknowledge our privilege or not, whether it's as a heterosexual or, the power dynamics between so-called men and women in our culture, that as we shift those dynamics, you know, by opening up the categories, if you will, and or even shifting and changing which category we might see ourselves in, mm-hmm. that it creates fear and or animosity and or confusion. And then we're kind of like, well, I don't know where I stand now, you know.
I think it's interesting, too, what's happening with the draft. Have you followed?
Yeah, would you update us on that?
That is interesting.
Yeah. So I think just recently there was a court case, and they're finding that to have an all-male draft is not constitutional. Right?
Yeah, I had heard that.
Right on.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, what's the next step?
So what is the next step? What, they're just saying it's unconstitutional.
Yeah, that's where they are, so there'll be an appeal of the case. I don't have all the details, but I was just thinking, theoretically, okay, sure, yeah, let's get rid of the draft for men only. That makes sense. But there's a real discomfort on the right in particular with, well, we're not going to draft women.
The women are already serving in the armed forces.
Well, I would argue that we don't want to, again, around the power dynamics, though, yeah, we don't want to draft women because then it also opens up the doors. A draft opens up the doors to draft wealthy individuals as well, and white guys and people with privilege. So I mean, it's really challenging. Again, I feel like it's challenging the status quo, and it's opening up the floodgates of everyone's going to get treated equally.
Mm-hmm. Oops, that won't work in an oligarchy.
No, I don't think so.
Cool, but that is equality.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that is equality, and we want equality, and that's part of the deal.
It is part of the deal.
And we're already there. We're just not drafted.
Yeah. Well, here's my stupid question. I thought the draft was over. Are we still drafting people?
We're not.
We are.
Well, not a draft.
Do men
There's
have to register
draft.
For the draft?
There's conversation about
boys,
it.
Boys, when they turn 18, they have to register with Selected Service. So, yes.
But we have a voluntary military.
We do, but there has been, this is kind of a whole other subject, but it is relevant to the gender identity issue in the sense that there is conversation, and I've read numerous articles recently, there is political conversation about having a draft actually becomes not so much about equality, but it's more equity. Mm-hmm. In other words, we're not just, because volunteer, we all know, if you look at the statistics of who's volunteering, it's people from lower income brackets, it's a high number of people of color. Mm-hmm. It's men and women, but it's more men than women because there's more opportunity for men in the military, although that's shifting and changing. Mm-hmm. So there's arguments. I'm not falling on one side or the other, but there's arguments for a draft because there's more equity in that. It's like everyone has to,
Exactly.
Serve.
Everyone has to serve their country.
Mm-hmm. And we go to war.
That's right. In the event that we do go to war, that's when the draft will actually happen. So.
We'll be activated. But
Be activated.
But we've been at war.
Yeah.
But for 15 years.
Yeah, maybe we would end if there was a draft, right?
We're getting into the
We're
getting into the dichotomies of politics.
Yeah. But it's power. I mean,
it is.
It's the because get that initial question of, you know, what are the fears that are connected with blurring these lines or changing the rules, so-called, of what is male and what is female and who gets to decide? And if it's not just about, you know, some designation that's physically based, but it's a choice that an individual has to make, then why is that threatening in some way? You know, or what does it take for us to embrace that and accept that? It's an interesting time. You know, young people I work with, as I mentioned, are pretty into the fluid, gender fluid thing, and they change and shift and they like the freedom of it. They're discovering, they're finding out who they are in terms of their gender identity, and they're willing to shift and change with their, you know, with their, you know, as their awarenesses develop about who they are and what they are.
Yeah, and that to me is a personal thing. It's a personal choice. The interesting question for me is what happens from a societal and a political perspective. You are listening to Real Talk Unleashed. I'm Susan McCabe, your host, here with Tanya Kinnear, Zane Jones, and Christina George. This is a special of Real Talk for the next 4 weeks through Women's History Month in March, and we can do this thanks to Windermere Real Estate, who supports all our community information programming, and that they make our emergency alert service possible. So beyond the personal, the gender identity thing, I think, has pretty much stayed at a personal level so far. Would you agree with that or not? The gender fluidity, the fluidity of gender identity has remained in the realm of personal choice, except when it comes to bathrooms. How much has the power dynamic changed? How would you see it changing as those who have chosen fluid gender identities start taking major roles in government, in business, in education?
Yeah, I think you're right to say, though, to point at the bathroom thing, as silly as it seems on some level, that it's the beginning of something. And there's other legislation that's happening around, even if it's a census taking, or certain states are finding, you know, they're having a different on birth certificates and driver's licenses. Mm-hmm. They're opening up to accept other gender identities.
Oh, that's interesting.
Male or female. So little by little, just like around issues of race and ethnicity or sexual orientation, certain rights, you know, get fought out in the courts in that way, right? And that becomes an acknowledgement that it, you know, on some level. Uh-huh. But, so I think it is more than just a personal.
Isn't that with the military sort of pushing back on that, saying that you can only you can only join up based on, you know, the gender you were born with? Well, and that if you transition, they're not recognizing that?
Well, there's the transgender ban that this administration not sure where we stand with that right now, right. But I heard a court upheld that recently.
I believe it did, mm-hmm. And it was, pardon the term, trumped up as a medical expense, mm-hmm. which of course is ridiculous.
It's
no, it's not.
Yeah.
You can get breast implants while you're in the military.
There you go.
They'll pay for it.
It's just playing into the fear. It's such a fear, isn't it? It's a fear in this country and, you know, other countries, I'm sure, as well. But of what is this, you know, this transgender thing? What is that about? It seems like a perversion to people. If you're born a certain way, that's the deal and that's it. You know, and what is it challenging them to accept that some people don't, you know, have that experience?
It seems, though, with the new generation, you think that eventually, as the older generation moves on, that this won't even be an issue as time goes on. I don't know. I mean, I know the pendulum kind of swings back and forth, but it seems like the momentum is so strong that seem to be going in the right direction.
I think you're right.
And I think parents now are deciding to bring their children up as gender fluid, or they're not pushing a gender on their children anymore, and they're just allowing them to be whoever it is they are, which I think, you know, is great. I have a grandchild coming a couple of weeks, and I think they're planning on doing that, and at least not, you know, nothing. It's not going to, she's a girl. It's not all going to be pink. You know, they're just going to see who she is, and I think that's really the best way to go in my mind.
Isn't that great? Prince Harry and Meghan.
They're doing that too.
They're doing that too. I read that. I'm kind of obsessed a little bit. Yeah. With those two.
Well, I had a question in my mind about, because I know that the United States, I think, is extremely and overly concerned about sexuality and gender and that kind of stuff. And I wonder how much of a concern gender fluidity is outside the United States. And I honestly don't have an answer for that. But I believe there are some countries that tend to be a little more masculine oriented than the United States, and many that are less so. And I just wonder whether gender identity becomes a legislative issue. We tend to legislate bodies a whole lot in this country, and Christina's going to talk about that in a couple of weeks. But does anyone have a feel for how other countries outside the U.S. view gender fluidity? Do they even talk about it?
I know that it's very difficult in a lot of places for... Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, go ahead. No, I'm not really sure how it is in terms of the UK and Europe, but I think it's always been an issue, but it seems to me just to have been less of an issue there than it is here. But I think in the UK, we're much more accepting of language, for example. We can pretty much say anything there, and I think there's maybe more, less concern in terms of that. But I don't know really in terms of gender issues. I mean, I grew up with, even, you know, when I was young in the 50s, we knew people who were gay. We knew they were gay. But then, of course, there was prejudice. But it seems less there than here. I think this country is sort of based on its puritanical history. The Puritan history, I think, has had a huge influence in this country. So I think it tends to want to control things a lot more than maybe other countries.
Yeah, I've often thought Australia got the better deal because they got the prisoners.
Yeah, definitely.
Who are a lot more fun than the Puritans were.
Yeah, I think the Puritans have done a lot of damage.
Yeah.
Personally.
Yeah.
And I think this country, you know, has said so much. It's so divided, and it is, and it has been, and the Civil War is not over. And I think we are finally seeing that that's true. It never really solved anything because wars don't solve a thing. But at least in my lifetime, you know, going back to Anita Bryant and the pie in the face, I just saw that picture recently, but in the LGBTQ community and that whole movement for civil rights, that this population, you know, this issue of gender identity and sexual orientation is such a flashpoint for people who want to stir up trouble and stir up, you know, division. And this can be such a focal point for people, I think. And like you're saying, these puritanical roots, this, who cares about the sexual activities? Clearly they don't care about what their president's doing, but here we are, dealing with this, you know, transgender ban in the military, which has, you know, is just blatant, you know,
discrimination.
And so there's just that element of, it's just a fiery topic, isn't it, for people? And it's a great way to divide people. Yeah. And again, I get back to the power, who benefits. Yeah. It's about staying in power and not relinquishing anything. I don't want my world to change. I don't want it to change who's allowed to marry who and the Methodist Church recently and all that silliness.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me, too, as I think about each of us individually adjusting to this change, regardless of our personal experience. We have experience with friends and loved ones who are in the midst of one form or another of gender fluidity. And to me, it's about finding or letting go of all the labels that we use to categorize people so we feel safe understanding them. And I think this kind of shakes that up. It takes away one of those categories that we might use to make someone understandable to us or safe so we can feel safe in interacting with them. We have to start looking at people as individuals, whatever their color, whatever their age, whatever their gender, however they choose to live, as long as they are not literally breaking the laws of society. In other words, your freedom to swing your hand stops with my face. Otherwise, You are who you are. And that's a whole new thing for us. Anybody have any feelings about that? No, you're all just nodding your heads.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think that there's something I'm just thinking as you were talking that I think I myself, you know, can feel uncomfortable sometimes when I'm, because I'm wanting to create space for some shifts and changes that I need to make. Like I was just literally on the phone with a colleague talking about a young person we're working with who's non-binary, mm-hmm. and I kept wanting to say she, and I just had to take the time. And I understand that it can become frustrating, or I feel foolish, or I feel like I'm doing something wrong, and then I want to react about that. So I understand where the reaction against comes from, because I have a small mini version of it. And
sure, we
myself,
do.
We
yeah.
all do. And that sense of like, oh, okay, it can be confusing and it can be disorienting, and I feel off center. I'm not sure. And they seems foreign.
Mm-hmm.
It seems weird. It seems strange to me to say that, but I want to be respectful, as you're suggesting. My heart and my desire is to be respectful. And I think the more that outweighs the other stuff, we're good to go, but sometimes it doesn't.
And I just read, too, that I don't know if it's in Webster's dictionary, or there's a new way of referring to people. So you have Mr., Miss, and now there's MX, mm-hmm. which
oh.
I'm not sure if
mix.
It's pronounced mix.
Mix.
Okay. And I thought, okay, well, that's some progress. That
Yeah, I dig that. I always hated the Ms., Miss., mm-hmm. Mrs.
Yeah, I often just want to say, never mind.
Yeah, just, why do we have to have
I don't
that?
Need a title, you know.
It's
yeah.
just about gender identity.
Yeah.
It's like, so I know.
Exactly what it is.
Are you male
so
or female?
So I can put you in a category.
So I know what I'm dealing with here.
And I do think it is a power thing. And I know that, going back to the why is it insulting to be mistaken for another gender, that is a power thing. And I know that strong women, regardless of their sexual orientation, have had trouble with this. And we see it in politics. We see that women who are running for office, women have to deal with the, is she likable question. Men don't have to deal with that. And that has to do with how strong is she as an individual. And we all have to deal with that discomfort.
Yeah,
and learn to respect one another for who we are, which is, I think the discomfort is, you're scaring me. Why do I have to change? I'm angry about having to change. I'm angry about your uppityness. Why are you demanding that I respect you, et cetera, et cetera? Which kind of lays bare the fact that this country also has a caste system.
And, you know, it sort of brings up an interesting point, too, about behavior and gender. And does your behavior create your gender? I guess.
From an outside view, yeah. Does your behavior, you think, does your behavior indicate your gender?
Or is your behavior acceptable due to your gender identity?
Yeah.
In other words, that sense of being in a room full of male colleagues mm-hmm. and noticing that one guy says something and does something and his demeanor is such and such and such. And then I mm-hmm. feel like I'm pretty much in the mix. I'm like, I'm right there with you guys. I'm energized by this.
Yeah.
I have strong opinions. I'm serious about what we're talking about. And then you can feel that there's a
mm-hmm.
in the room, a moving back in the room, mm-hmm. like there's a ripple that happens when a woman is engaged in the same kind of energy or assertive mm-hmm. behavior as perhaps a male colleague. So those subtle, sometimes really subtle energy, mm-hmm. you know, that feeling in the room, which it's just a reaction to like, okay, well, yeah, your gender. Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff we have to deal with as gender becomes a fluid question and we're out of time. And sexuality becomes something that really doesn't matter all that much. Thank you for listening, folks. Thank you, wonderful learned women, Tanya Kinnear, Zane Jones, and Christina George. You've been listening to Real Talk Unleashed, and we're going to be here for the entire month of March discussing controversial topics. Next week, it is Raising Kids with Grit for the Future. Tanya Kinnear will be our thought leader. If you want to make some contributions to that conversation, send your notes to realtalk@voiceofvashon.org. Thanks for listening.